Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. And today, I have a guest host, Patrick, and we are going to be discussing the movie Bubba Hotep, starring Bruce Campbell. And I'm not sure, I'm going to give a quick little bit about how I discovered this film, and then Patrick can tell us how he came across it. As you know, everybody knows, there was a certain period of time there where Bruce Campbell kind of disappeared off the radar. You know, he kind of wasn't doing much. He did Briscoe County, but he hadn't been doing a movie. We were all waiting for a new Evil Dead film, and there rumors circulated for, man, years and years that they were going to do a new Evil Dead film, and everybody was excited to see what was going to happen. In the meantime, this movie was announced. Now, that was not playing in the theater around here. I had heard about it, and so I was anxiously awaiting it, and I never had an opportunity to watch it in a theater. So as soon as the DVD came out and it was available, I purchased it. And the movie I felt the first time viewing this time, you know, obviously I had a more critical eye toward it, but I felt the first time I viewed it, it had a lot of the things we wanted, you know, some of the little bit of comedy bits, some salty language and things like that. But I also felt that it was a lot more dramatic than I thought it would be. You know, I thought that it would be more humorous and more action-packed, but my feeling was that it was a lot more dramatic. It came across, there was a lot more drama. There was a lot more to this movie than just this low-budget, creature feature they were trying to put out there. How did you hear about it or discover this film, Patrick?
Yeah, it was pretty much the same kind of situation where I was a Bruce Campbell fan from Evil Dead, And from Briscoe County, and I, like you, I heard rumors that this movie was coming out. It went out to film festivals and it went to kind of like art house movie theater. So I didn't see it in the theater like you, but I put it on my wish list as soon as it hit DVD. I'd want to see it, and I agree with you. The first time I saw the movie, I was expecting more of like a creature feature, and I guess it wasn't what I expected. And the second time around, I think I appreciated it more for kind of like the depth of what was going on and kind of like the introspection that our main character was having about his life.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I wasn't disappointed the first time I saw it. I was surprised actually at the drama. What it was is it wasn't what I expected, which doesn't necessarily mean it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it was, man, when I watch it, I'm like, and part of it too was, I think part of what made it hit so hard for me is they deal a lot with, you know, he's in a nursing home, so we're dealing with like end of life type of stuff.
Right.
Well, Bruce Campbell had so much makeup on, he looked older than he normally was anyway, and we hadn't seen him in quite a while, and it was somebody who I kind of connected with his, I mean, I love the Evil Dead film, and the fact that it was an independent movie and that, because of that, you know, I really kind of connected with him as a person and him as trying to create something, do something good on a small budget. And so you're like, man, here's this guy that's done all this stuff. And, you know, it seemed like he was really like, you know, with the makeup, and everything, like he was like end of life. And I'm like, well, this is kind of depressing, you know?
Yeah.
But the movie had a budget of less than $500,000. The domestic gross was $1.2 million. It ran in the theater for about, I'm trying to see, it ran for like 15 weeks. And unfortunately, like I said, I would have loved to have seen this in a theater if I had the opportunity, but the opportunity just was not there, you know. And a funny story, a funny coincidence, is that I know Joe R. Lansdale that wrote the book?
Right. Yeah, it was Joe Lansdale who wrote the story.
Well, I don't know that I know the name, but I don't know that I've actually read anything by this author before. And just this week before we discussed doing this film, I was talking to a friend of mine, Bruce, who's an avid reader, and he was telling me about Honky Tonk Samurai, which is his newest book. It's a Happ and Leonard book. Mm-hmm. I had heard of Happ and Leonard, and they briefly had a TV series. I'm not sure what station it was on. I don't know if it was like a mini series or what. And I watched like half of an episode, was completely lost, and just kind of tapped out because there's just too much on TV right now.
Right.
But anyway, I was kind of interested in this book, and so Bruce was telling me he got it, and I said, "Hey, I said, you know, this book, this has come up on my radar a couple times now. It looks like something I might enjoy. I was like, but can I jump right in and, you know, not without reading anything else? And so he kind of gave me a rundown of, like, you know, a couple of the books, you know, if I was going to, that books I could skip. But he said, no, he said, you can jump right in. And Happen Leonard, I got it, and I finished it in like 3 days, and it is hilarious. They're a detective team, and there is a case, but the dialogue between them, man, it cracks me up. I was like, and you know what? I listened to it on audiobook, and the very first day, I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't know. I figured it'd be some comedy elements, but I thought it'd be kind of like, I don't know if I thought it'd be more serious or what. Well, I was about 2 miles into my run, and it was like about 25 degrees out, and I am laughing so hard, and I'm like, this is not conducive to good. I'm going to hurt myself. I'm running. I'm laughing. There is just snot everywhere. I'm like, I'm glad nobody I know is driving by right now. But man, I really, really enjoyed it. And then it was funny because I knew that this was based on a book, but I had no idea until I looked. I was like, that's a weird coincidence. I just finished a book of his, and here we are, and you know, we have, and this you know, this book is written by this man too. Now I want to read the book. I have not yet, but I want to read it because they say that the only character in the film that the major character didn't make it from the book was a female who thinks that she's John Dillinger.
Oh, okay.
So that would be kind of interesting, yeah, as well. Yeah. And I'm wondering if maybe they did. They played on the Lone Ranger character, as there's a gentleman in a nursing home who thinks he's the Lone Ranger, and you know, tries to take on the zombie with his fake guns, you know, or the mummy. I don't want to call him a zombie, the mummy. So, you know, with that being said, you know, the film itself, it runs, it's about an hour and a half, and it is not your typical action film. You know, what we have is we have characters who, when I went back and watched it again, you know, I guess initially when I watched it, I thought it was about characters who had regret. But when I watched it a second time, I don't know that I feel that they have regret. I think that they feel that they made the choices that they made, and here they are at the end of their life, and whether or not they would, you know, make those choices again, I feel as though they would. You know what I mean? You have your two main characters. You have the Elvis character, and then you have the JFK character. You know, and there's a point when they talk about their lives and, you know, like their daughters and stuff like that.
Yeah, before they go off to battle the mummy at the end, they have that conversation like you alluded to, and they kind of like put their life in stock at how they were as fathers, and it was nice because they were kind of making peace with the decisions that they made. And I agree with you that Elvis has regrets kind of running through it until he kind of gets drawn into this bigger picture. When Kemosabe, the Lone Ranger character, dies with his soul, I mean, he has a heart attack shooting at the mummy, but he has a heart attack and dies, and Elvis appreciates that he went out fighting and he kept his soul, and which I believe is like one of those like motivators for Elvis to get Jack to try to take on the mummy, because that's the way you want to go out. You just don't want to you know, run away from it, and you'd also don't want to have your soul sucked out. And you know, I mean, like the way Elvis would look at it was always very clever. The way they had the internal dialogue on what would happen to his soul if the mummy got to it.
All right, I have a clip from. We're going to try, everybody out there. This is going to be a new thing. We're going to see if I can make this work. I'm already having a couple of minor audio issues. It seems as though the feedback from my mic is fading in and out, but we're going to try this and see how this works. But bear with me. I've got some new setup here and everything, and I'm trying to make this more of a the idea of the podcast is to have more of a community interaction with people, and I really, really want to make it work. So everybody's got to bear with me through the pain of trying to make everything come together so that it works the way I want to. Anyway, I have a couple of clips here. The first clip here is of when the nurse comes in and is talking to Elvis, and he explains who he is. Now, everybody needs to keep in mind that these clips, there's going to be some salty language in here. Okay, there's no way for me to work around that. That is what the character is. This is what you know. A lot of what brings the characters into focus is their anger about where they are now, not due to decisions, due to the fact that they're old. And their bodies have kind of let them down, and they were both once something great, and now they're something. Now they're just, they feel as though they're old and useless, and that's kind of what all these clips kind of touch on. You know, them coming back to life. So let's see if we can make this work.
Patient, how are you this morning, Mr. Hare?
I'm all right, but I prefer Mr. Presley or Elvis. I keep telling you that. I don't go by Sebastian Half anymore, okay? I don't try and hide anymore.
Well, of course, I knew that. I forgot. Good morning, Elvis. Did you know we have a celebrity here, Miss Thomas? Elvis Presley. You know, the rock and roll singer.
I thought he was dead.
Well, actually, Elvis is dead. Mr. Half knows that, don't you, Mr. Half?
Hell no, I'm right here. I ain't dead. Yet.
Now, Mr. Half, I don't mind calling you Elvis, but you're a little confused and you like to play sometime. You were an Elvis impersonator, remember? You fell off a stage and broke your hip? When was it? 20 years ago. You got infected and you were in a coma for quite a while. You came out with a few problems.
Look, I was just impersonating myself, okay? I couldn't do nothing else. I don't have any problems. You're trying to say my brain's messed up, aren't you?
Why would you want to be somebody else?
Got tired of it. I was hooked on pills, you know. I wanted out. And this boy, Sebastian Half, he was an Elvis imitator. He's the best of them. He took my place. Problem is, he had a bad heart. He liked drugs too. Liked them more than I did, so it was him that died, not me. I just...
From there, he goes on to explain how he went and saw the impersonator and how they switched places because Elvis was just tired of all the attention and stuff and kind of wanted to have a normal life. And what I think is interesting when I was talking about like regrets or remorse, that I'm not sure if it's regrets. I don't know if regrets is the right term. Is it like he might regret something he did, but he's okay with the outcome? I'm not exactly sure if that's a regret, you know, exactly how to term that.
Well, it's definitely the case of like not being satisfied with what's currently happening, you know, or the inability to appreciate what he had, you know, in the past.
Initially, when I watched it, I just kind of thought that, you know, this is that he made this decision and now he's saddened by it. But at some point in the movie, he's having the inner dialogue again and he is saying that would he switch back? And he's, you know, it makes me think that, yeah, that he would switch back if he had the opportunity, or at least he's thinking about it. So does that mean that, you know, the decisions he made, you know, as far as like, you know, faking his death, that he regretted that because, you know, because he feels useless now? It's pretty deep.
Yeah. See, I thought it was more that he regretted losing Priscilla and not being able to be near his daughter, Lisa Marie, when she was growing up. Because at one point he has kind of like a hallucination where there's a female figure silhouette in the hallway.
Yeah, yeah.
He calls out to his daughter. But this is an Elvis who's very interesting because he'll evaluate his life and there will be the Elvis marathon on the you know, on the TV, and he thinks that he's never watched any of his movies because it's just, to him, it wasn't even real in any way. But he's kind of holding on to, should he be the hero now that he played in those movies?
Yeah, and he definitely understands that he had a lot of hangers-on that were just there for the money. They didn't really
yeah.
care about him, you know.
Yeah.
He even mentions the, you know, the colonel and how, like,
Colonel,
you know,
Parker.
How he should have kicked him to the curb a long time ago when things started to go sideways. But the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie is basically him, you know, he has a monologue and he is, you know, we're hearing everything he's always thought process and how, like, he wonders if this is all there is at the end of life is just, you know, eating, pooping and having sex, you know, is that the only thing that there is. And he just spends all his time in bed and they have this really cool, I thought it was a really nice effect when him like looking at the doorway and time passing, considering that it's not a very busy, you know, rest home. Doesn't seem to be a lot of activity going on there. And I thought that the other thing that I found kind of interesting is that like, the other people's rooms were nicer than his, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't, you know, because the first time I watched this film, I thought, man, I'm like, this is a really crappy, you know, rest home when there's no, like, you know, it's very barren and cold looking and not homey at all. And then you see JFK's room and you're like, oh, he's got a really nice room, you know?
And it was very JFK. I love his room.
Yeah, you know, oh, you know, my God, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the pictures and the diorama that he had made of like the Dallas shooting. I was really happy with the whole character of Jack Kennedy in the movie, played by Ossie Davis.
Yeah, he's just a fantastic actor. And man, he pulls this off in a way that you know, I don't know who else could have done it as well, because you start out and you're like, okay, this guy's a little nuts, and then as it progresses, it's like you think of him as very presidential.
Right. He plays with such dignity that it doesn't matter if he literally is JFK, who they died and put a bag of sand in his head, or someone who is delusional. It doesn't matter, because when you're watching the movie, he pulls it off that he really is this presidential character.
Yeah, and it's a great growth on the film, because it kind of grows organically. You know, even though he's insisting all along that he's JFK, it's like you start to believe it at the end. You know, if you were in any kind of denial about it, you're like, yeah, man, this is JFK, you know. And speaking of that, I have a clip here of when he gets introduced. Elvis says there's only one other guy here that you know, he can, like, have a conversation with or trust. And he said, but this guy is kind of crazy.
That's where they took a piece of my brain. They got it back in D.C. in that goddamn job. I got a little bag of sand up there now.
Jack, no offense, but President Kennedy was a white man.
That's how clever they are. They dyed me this color all over. Can you think of a better way to hide the truth than that?
I cannot think of a better way to hide the truth than that. So, hey, you're hearing the audio files, okay, right?
I am. It's so, an excellent file, yeah.
Okay, so maybe this will work in the future. So, I when I first saw that scene the very first time, I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And at first I thought maybe it's just a whole nursing home full of people who are just kind of crazy and have dementia and nobody's who they seem. And, you know, and then as the movie progresses, you start seeing these characters that we've known, and they do start coming across as genuine, even though they may not look as they used to look, you know. And I think that to me, that's one of the selling points of the movie. And also, you know, I want to throw out there that I think Bruce Campbell does an excellent, top-notch acting job in this. I mean, he really does.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but during the second, you know, the rewatch I just did this week to prepare for this, it's like, man, it's like I must be at that age where everything that he's saying is hitting home, you know, about being old and useless. And, you know, you have that scene with, I mean, Elvis, he was known as a ladies' man. You know, you have that scene where that guy's daughter comes in, his roommate passes away, and she comes in and is cleaning out her stuff, and he asks for something, and she bends over, and he can see right up her dress, and he's like, she doesn't even care. She thinks I'm a stray cat. I'm harmless to her, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a fantastic, like, cap on what he was trying to say. You know, this is the explanation point of what I'm trying to say. People we're just here. They work around us, but we're not people anymore, you know? And I like the fact that is how he's feeling. And then as the film progresses and the mummy has this way of sending out these cockroaches, but they didn't really explain that very well.
Yeah. Now you saw the movie Phantasm, right? And the same. Yeah. And in Phantasm, they had the flying spiky ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I felt that this was the director's way of kind of like doing some of his tricks that he likes to do by having this like dangerous scarab that was flying around. And all we know is that when Elvis has like a moment where he sees into the mummy's past, there was like a huge scarab that was part of it. So that's like the mummy's familiar, but you're right. We have no explanation of what was going on with that big beetle other than it was associated with the mummy.
Yeah. The very first time I saw the scarab, I thought that was the mummy. And then when the second time you see him, I'm like, okay, that can't be the mummy. That must be something that he sends out. But I think, you know, part of that was giving them something to fight, or giving us a sign that, hey, the mummy's coming or whatever.
Right.
You know, there is a scene that is unrelated to the mummy where the lady, it must be a dialysis machine she's in.
Yeah.
And the other lady comes over and there's not any dialogue, and she takes her glasses and wanders off with them. And that was like six levels of creepy, man. I'm like, oh my God, they got this lady like in the basement with a dialysis machine. She thinks she's made a friend, and the lady takes the glasses off of her and wanders off. I'm like, that was harsh.
Right. You know, and it's so creepy because, you know, the woman, you know, she's an old woman, you know, lovable old woman wandering the hall. And then it's an iron lung, I think is what it is. But but we understand that an old woman, another woman, is immobilized in this contraption, and the first one walks up and is like, and she's looking at her so kindly, and she's like brushing her hair, and the woman who's in the machine is like so happy that someone's there, and then she takes her glasses and steals them, and it was just like oh my God.
And she takes him, and the woman in Ireland's like, no, in a real small voice. And I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. It's so creepy. That I think that was like one of the creepiest scenes of the film. It was just very, very dark, you know, for what was going on. I don't know, it's such a small scene, but made an impression. But it's like little scenes like that dressed up the film, you know, that made it seem like, you know, not only was the rest home kind of desolate, you know, as well as the pretty much the souls of the people there, you know, they're just kind of going through the daily grind without any direction, you know, just surviving, you know. And I don't know, man, it really, like I said, when I watched the second time, that really kind of hit home of like what, you know, what they were trying to do with this film. And like, I appreciate it. I didn't think I could love this movie more than I do. And when I watched this time, I appreciated it that much more. I mean, there's a lot of drama in this film that I don't think it gets enough credit for, the message it's carrying across, even though we have a lot of the fun things, we have the comedy, we have the, you know, the monsters and all the nods. There's a bunch of nods to Phantasm in here. And I just felt that, man, you know, this is really kind of, it's a lot deeper the second time around than I thought, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So what happens is we get, you know, Elvis sees somebody, you know, sees the mummy, and JFK, you know, sees the mummy, and they are, you know, the mummy looks at Bruce, and they make a connection, and, you know, Elvis, I should say, and he sees, you know, like some of what happened in the past, and they're trying to figure out what's, you know, what's going on. And so JFK brings Bruce to the visitor's restroom. Where they have, I don't have it in front of me here.
I basically remember what it is, but on the toilet wall, the mummy had scratched out, you know, Pharaoh, you know, eats donkey boogers, and Cleopatra does the nasty.
Yeah, and it's in hieroglyphics,
right?
And he shows it to Bruce, and he's like, or to Elvis, and he's like, well, what? So what? You know. And then they get into a discussion about why would the mummy be in there if he's eating souls? Like, what would he be pooping? You know, and it's not in light. It's like, really, it's like, okay, well, if he's in here and he's using the bathroom, what's he using it for? You know, and it's like, you never think about these things, but it's these little details that kind of matter, I think, you know?
Right, right.
So they go back and they're trying to formulate a plan, and I do have another audio file here if I can unlock my phone. Okay, this is a little long. It's like 2 minutes, but I'm gonna go ahead and play this.
Damn. Hey Jack, what it says here is that you can bury some dude, and if he gets the right ten of leaves and spell set over him and such bullshit, that he can come back to life thousands of years later, man. But hold on now. To stay alive, he has to suck on the souls of the living, and then if the souls are small, his life force doesn't last long. Small. What does that mean?
Read on. No, never mind. I'll tell you myself. But first, would you like a dingo? Oh, I don't mean mine. I mean a chocolate dingo. Of course, mine would be chocolate now that I have been dyed.
You got ding-dongs, man?
I got paydays, and I got a box of babies.
Oh, mama.
Which will it be? Let's get decadent.
I'll take a Babe Ruth.
All right. Now, small soul, of those that don't have much fire for life, you know a place like that?
Oh, man, if souls were fires, it couldn't burn much lower than in here.
Exactamundo. What we have here at Shady Rest is an Egyptian soul sucker of some sort. You know, a mummy hiding out, coming in here, feeding on the sleeping. It's perfect, you see? Now, we're small souls, so we can't provide him much. But if that thing comes back two or three times in a row and wraps his lips around some elder's arsehole, that elder is going to die pretty soon. And who will be the wiser?
Now, with that being said, I the part that I left out is that, you know, he's not just throwing out the butt there for no reason. They were saying it has to be a major orifice to suck the soul out of, and that's how he was attacked once, and that's what he was trying to do. He's trying to suck his soul out of his butthole, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So that does have some significant meaning here. But what I love about that clip, you know, one of two favorite clips I think in this movie is that not only does that cover our story, but the whole side conversation about just being able to have like candy and sweets and stuff like that, because he does have a niece that comes in and visits him. Right. And, you know, where Elvis has nobody that comes and visits him. So it's kind of a whole different, you're in the same building, but you're in a whole different section, you know, it seems like, you know, lifestyle wise. And I really liked, I mean, Ozzie Davis did such a fantastic job in this movie. I mean, by the end, it's like, I want to salute the guy. I'm like, dude, you are very presidential and you know what you're doing. Now, the thing that one of the thing that makes this movie great for me, and you know, it again, the theme of being useless, is that time goes on. They slowly through the film, obviously, since it's about them battling a mummy, they decide that they're going to try to stop the mummy, and it gives them purpose and direction, which they haven't had up until now. And especially we see that with Elvis more so than JFK, because Elvis is giving us the monologue and we find out, you know, and he has the whole scene with the nurse where he has a growth on his penis and it needs to have medication applied to it. And so she comes in to do that. And when she does, he gets an erection and he's just so very proud of himself. And he's analyzing and he's like, well, why did this happen? You know?
Right. Because clearly, nothing had been happening down there for some time in his mind. And while she's taking care of business, he's thinking about the mummy and what they have to do. And it gets him, gets the juices pumping.
Yeah.
And
I thought that was great, because he had, you know, he suddenly has direction and,
right.
You know, and especially, you know, and again, you know, I know this is supposed to be kind of like a comedy, and I'm not trying to bring anybody down, but you see this in people in your lives, like, you know, older people, as they start to slow down and their body starts to give out in different ways, you know, they don't have the energy they used to have. And then suddenly, you know, they don't have direction. They have nothing to do. They retire. And then, you know, they just kind of slow down, and they don't have a purpose anymore. And they kind of have that, you know, they don't have drive, but they seem sad. Well, whether they are or not, I don't know. I mean, I'll let you know if I ever retire, but you know, it just seems like without the direction, without a drive, that there's no purpose. You know, what's the point of getting out of bed?
Yeah. And there's a quality of life that begins to kind of like lessen and lessen. And, you know, when you get to that point where you've retired and you have nothing going on and you have nobody coming to visit you, then it's kind of like now you're just waiting to die. And that is like the most depressing type of situation to be in. Anyway, so everyone is like in a bad, you know, undead like situation going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that might be one of the uplifting qualities of the film for me. The fact that, you know, we see somebody who starts out the first, you know, 10 minutes of the film, he's just laying in bed as the day and people and life passes him by. And then by the end, he's got his juices back, and he's like, it's very much rewarding for us watching it that
here's, right.
You know, that he's like, hey man, you know, bring it on. You know, he's trying to do his kung fu and stuff. He's like, don't make me use my stuff on you, man. You know, and just really well done. There's a bit of trivia that they say that at one point in time in the beginning of that, where he spent so much time in the bed where they were filming, that he actually had to use the bedpan because they couldn't move all the lights and the equipment. And I think that that's hilarious.
Right. Yeah. That was in the making of where he was stuck there and he just said, well, while I'm here, I'll use the bedpan. Yes. So we're up to date on the making of.
Yeah. That's just kind of awkward. You know, like, what are you supposed to do in that situation? And you have cameras and lights and everything else. Like, talk about having an audience, you know?
Right.
Curiously, like, how did you watch this film? You know, do you have a DVD or did you rent it or did you stream it or?
No, I had the DVD. I got it, pretty shortly after it was available. I got it. My wife and I watched it, and we watched it when it, 2003, I guess, is when it was available.
Yeah.
And then, because we were going to do the podcast of the movie, I watched it over the weekend on a big TV I have in my basement, so it was a better experience. But yeah, on DVD.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm trying to branch out a little bit as far as how people there are so many different ways and so many different networks, so to say, producing their own stuff, that I'm trying to find out ways how everybody's partaking of their particular media. I mean, for the most part, I'm digital across the board with everything except for movies at this point. And if there's, I have two bands that that I buy still on CD because I love uncompressed music more than compressed music. And that's if
sure.
Kiss releases a CD, I'm buying a CD. And if Dylan releases a CD, I'm buying a CD, unless like the last one I didn't love that much. I use a streaming service for music and that seems to be working for me. That's kind of a new thing. I just started doing that. 6 or 7 months ago, and because my hard drive was filling up in iTunes, and because I have two gigantic crates full of CDs, because I have a bunch of live shows and stuff, and I hate to part with them, but I'm not. I don't think I have the patience to digitize everything, so I'm not exactly sure where I'm going to do. Probably let them sit here in the house till I die. That's probably what I'm going to do. Comics, I'm just about all digital now. It's so much easier, and I read a lot of comics and books, all digital for the most part, and movies is the only thing, and that's only because I can't do it across the board. You know what I mean? If I could find one company that made it easy that I can watch everywhere, and also if I could download it so that if I didn't have, if I was on a plane or something, or if I'm on vacation, I can stream it that way, then I would do that. But right now, the price is what kills you. It's like you can buy, $15, you can buy a digital file, or for $18, you can buy a Blu-ray DVD digital file combo. Well, why wouldn't you buy the other one? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I just, I know that Shout Factory did a release of Bubba Hotep. I think it was the last year. It's been in the last year, I thought. And Shout Factory is pretty good with their releases. They when they do a Blu-ray, they usually do a pretty good job of, it depends on the release, but there's always usually an increase in picture quality, whether they rescan it or they upscale it or whatever. And they usually have some decent bonus features as well. But the discs also tend to be kind of expensive on release, so you might want to wait a while. But I think you can probably pick that one up at Amazon for under $15. If I already have it on DVD, I'm not upgrading unless there's something that makes it, worthwhile. Like, if I have like one season of something and then they release a 5-season pack on Blu-ray, well, then I might pick that up because I want to get the other seasons anyway. But,
sure.
I have the special edition DVD that came out and it's still, it was on my bookshelf and I have so many DVDs. I'm like, they're not in alphabetical order either. They're in some kind of weird order. It made sense to me when I did it. And I don't know what that order is. And I had to look on my bookshelf for like 10 minutes to find it. I'm like, oh, here it is. I had to wipe the dust off the top of it. It's been a while since I watched it. I had it in my to-watch pile, and then I took it back out, and then I put it back in. I took it back out, and then I'm like, okay, well, now I got a reason to watch it again,
I got DVDs spread out throughout the house. In the family room, I've got just a bunch of DVDs, and down the basement I do. You would probably not like my organizational system, but because I won't like line them up by height or anything. I'll just put stuff where they go. So in general, whenever my wife wants to show something to our daughter, it's a big scavenger hunt to try to find where in the house the DVD is.
So, yeah.
So,
I feel your pain.
So I don't, I mean, you know, but it's my own choice, right? I'm just too lazy to try to organize it, but it's just one of those deals.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, I have DVDs. Like, I have, like, well, you understand that the way my house is built is, like, the master bedroom of my house used to be the living room in the house, but then they added on and they changed things up. So there's extra room in the master bedroom, more room than what I need. So I have two bookcases in the master bedroom that have some books and DVDs on them. And then I have two more shelving units that I built that are smaller that hang on the wall. And then I have a shelving unit in the living room that has DVDs on it. So usually, I go through and, like, anymore, like, I'm on this whole thing of just kind of streamlining life at this point, you know. And so I'm trying to go through and pick out the stuff that I know I'm never going to watch again, and giving it to somebody. Or things that I bought a Blu-ray version of, and I still have the DVD copy for some reason. You know, there are several Harry Potter films I have on DVD, but I bought the Blu-ray box set 2 years ago, and I haven't gone around to gather up the other DVDs. I'm never going to watch them. I have it on Blu-ray, you know?
Sure.
So it's just trying to streamline everything. But I actually have an app on my phone that I started twice now and have never finished, where you can scan the barcode and keep track of your collection, you know. And I'm like, still have not done that. I'm just, every time I go to start it again, and then I get sidetracked, or I'm like, okay, where did I leave off at? And I'm like, crap, I got to start off from the beginning again. Otherwise, it's telling you already have this. It's just kind of a waste of time to do it again and again. But I try real hard to not buy stuff on disc if I'm, you know, if I know I'm not going to watch it more than once. But heck, you know, we go to the movie, you know, family of four, you're in for at least $50 for a matinee.
You know,
I can buy two DVDs for that, and then I can throw it in the trash when I'm done with it, for all that matters, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's just like, you never know what room we're going to watch it in. And like, I have an Apple TV in one room, I have an Xbox in another room, you know, it's like, you never know where you're going to watch it. If you get the disc, you can play it pretty much anywhere, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's kind of that was a whole sidetrack on collecting media. I mean, I got rid of my comic collection except for like four short boxes. I've parted with many, many books that I have digital versions of now. And I'm just trying to – we had some water in the basement. And so what happened is everything got pushed to the side because we were trying to keep it out of the water. We got it all cleaned up and everything, but we had a ginormous mound of stuff. And so before the kids went back to school, I said, look, we're cleaning the basement today. I'm like, you don't have to clean anything up. You just tag what you want to save and what you don't want to save so I can clean it. Well, they both helped me out. We got everything cleaned up. I told my daughter, I'm like, she's like, I'm going to throw this stuff out. Is that okay? I'm like, you can throw it out. You can keep it. But if you keep it, we're going to put it in plastic totes that seal and we'll organize it, you know. But I said, but keep in mind, when I die, all this crap is your problem, you know. I'm like, so I'm just kind of giving you a head start of getting rid of all the crap because, you know, so we did. And talk about a massive purge, man. There was just so much stuff. I mean, I probably had 15 contractor bags and numerous, I had totes that were starting to crack. I just threw stuff in there. I just took it off for the trash man. And then 2 days later, I had somebody going through my trash. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, I don't care if you go through the totes because you can take the lids off. And I'm like, you're untying the bags and just leaving them untied and wandering away. I'm like, don't do that. That's just, that's just a, you know, a dick move. Don't do that. But anyway, so we are at the next audio clip I have. This is my favorite audio clip. And I can't explain why. I think it's because Elvis finally gets angry and realizes that, you know, he is more, I think this is a realization that he's been treated like an object to this point. It's just somebody in the way where he's basically, everybody's waiting for him to die. And so it is one of my favorite clips. And again, if I can get my phone unlocked, salty language.
Mr. Half, Mr. Presley, now, Mr. Presley, you are looking much stronger. But you shouldn't be out here too long. It's time for your nap. And it's also time for us to do that little, well, you know.
You fuck off, you patronizing bitch. I'm sick of your shit. I'll lube my own crankshaft from now on. You treat me like a baby again, I'll wrap this goddamn walker right around your head.
Okay, so I love that clip. It is one of my favorites, and, you know, like I said, because he really, you know, got the fire back.
Yeah, and the nurse's reaction is really good. I mean, she plays that role really well of this like shock and amazement that he is has all this fire and spunk in him.
Yeah. And for the most part, she hasn't necessarily been, you know, mean toward him or anything, but we have that scene when his roommate passes away and the daughter comes in and they both kind of laugh when they leave the room because he thinks he's Elvis Presley, you
right.
know? And so you have those little things like that that happen because, you know, it's the whole thing. It leads toward like you're old. They act like you're not even in the room. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, the fact that they think that he has nothing left to contribute when in fact he does. He knows this whole mummy thing is going on. And they have no idea what's happening, you know. That leads me to another question that maybe I missed a point here. There's a point when she is outside smoking a cigarette and she looks over to the shed and there's lights flickering inside the shed, which clearly must be like what was that supposed to be? It was supposed to be the mummy coming back or where the mummy was hanging out or, you know.
Yeah, well, the mummy's definitely in the shed, but we know he doesn't really hang out there for real because they assume he's going to come out of the creek bed, and he does because he comes walking up into their trap.
I didn't understand the point of that scene, though. Like, at first I thought maybe somebody's going to be murdered there or something, but that didn't happen.
It's one of those, like, fake-out scares, I guess, where, you know, there's that creepy moment. You know, like we were like walking through the dark house and the cat jumps out of you. In this case, the nurse is fixated on the shed, but then she's scared by Reggie, the guy who runs the rest home. And so that's one of those like fake out scares, you know, for us in the audience, where the pacing works. And then shortly after that is when the mummy goes in and attacks the Kemosabe's roommate. So it was just kind of like a precursor to the attack.
Okay, it's just like upon second watch, it just seemed like a little bit of filler, and I thought maybe we were going to get some insight into the nurse, and we really didn't, you know?
No, we didn't, and you might say that the way the movie is, it's not a perfect movie, and so the pacing was kind of maybe off in some bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay, I'm going to talk. And I think the movie Phantasm has a similar kind of like weird pacing at times, and so I didn't mind it because I can respect this movie as a B movie, but a really enjoyable, you know, B movie.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I think that, you know, I wondered if when I watched it a second time, and then when I was I watched it. Well, I can't say I watched the whole thing a third time. I can't kind of scan through to my favorite spots to pull the audio clips, and I went over that scene again, and I was just wondering if maybe the point was, although I don't feel the point was made well, was that when the boss man comes out and tells her that, you know, one of the patients is ready for her enema or something.
Yeah.
If we were supposed to feel like the weight of the world on the nurse's shoulders, that this is like a daily grind for her, you know, and
yeah.
I feel as though they didn't really explain that well enough to, I mean, you know, I mean, I know about nursing homes.
Sure.
I've had family,
sure.
So I kind of get that. But if you were young and didn't understand that, I don't feel as though they did a really good job of hammering that point home, and maybe they could have done a little bit better. I just felt that because of that, the scene seemed like a little bit of filler, but not a big deal. Not a big deal. I mean, the movie overall is so enjoyable that it was just, I just was curious what you got from that scene.
Yeah, no, I agree. And in fact, the second time through, I had forgotten what happened from that scene. And so I was worried for the nurse until Reggie showed up. And then I remembered, no, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I got another clip here when they're talking about how the mummy, you know, came back after, you know, we find out that there has been some research and, you know, that the mummy was on a bus. He was stolen and on a bus, and then the bus wrecked and he, you know, the bus landed in the creek. And apparently back then nobody thought to look in the creek. I don't know. It's hiding a whole bus, for God's sake. Must be more than a creek, you know. But anyway, they think that the protection on the sarcophagus got thrown off, and that's how the mummy was able to escape. So the two of these guys are slowly getting all the details together as to what happened. So let's see if this works.
Three. Look here, how'd it come back to life, man? And how did I end up inside his memories?
The speculation broadens here. But from what I read, some mummies get buried without their names, a curse put on their sarcophagus.
Hey, now, maybe our boy's one of them. I mean,
When he's in the coffin, he's just a dried-up old corpse. But when the bus got washed away, I mean, maybe it overturned or broke open or something, now he's free of coffin and curse, man.
He's free from imprisonment, but he still needs souls.
And now he's free to have them. He can just keep on feeding unless he's finally destroyed. So what do we do, Jack?
Well, changing rest homes might be a good idea. I can't think of much else. But I will say this. Our mummy is a nighttime kind of guy. So, I'm going to go and sleep now. Set my alarm for just before dark. Then I can get myself a couple of cups of coffee.
Damn straight. Comes in here tonight, I don't want him slapping his lips on my asshole.
Yes. Consider it. He's got the proverbial bird's nest on the ground here.
I think that scene does a good job of explaining why he's hitting up this nursing home. You know, even though the souls are small, you know, it's basically an all-you-can-eat buffet, right? Nobody can defend.
Yeah, the prey is easy, and they can't really get away from him. And no one will really notice that people are being killed because everyone is old and they're just going to be dying off anyway.
Yeah, and I like the to me, this was a little bit of character development for JFK, because up until now, he's, you know, we just kind of assume he wants to discover the mystery, but he's going to do something about it. But in this clip, he's like, I'm just going to switch nursing homes, you know what I mean? And you realize that it all comes down to him just, you know, where Elvis is the man of action, JFK was the one who was always more cerebral. And,
right.
You know, he's like, well, we figured everything out, but, you know, what are we going to do? You know, we're just a couple of old guys. And besides that, they dyed me black and gave me a sack of sand for a brain. So, you know, I'm out, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's at this point where, you know, again, Elvis starts to fall back into kind of a little bit of a slump. Like, you don't think that, you know, you're not exactly sure what's going to happen. You know, is he going to just be like, yeah, you know what, the heck with it. You know, I'm on my way out anyway. I'm useless. I'm not going to do anything. And as a couple things happen, it progresses. He starts to get angry because, you know, this is, you know, he may not be Elvis. He might not have, you know, hordes of fans after him anymore. But still, this is his home. This is where he lives. And so I have this is the final clip that kind of gets the action rolling. And I love it.
Well, God damn it. I'll be damned if I let some foreign graffiti-writing, soul-sucking son of a bitch in an oversized cowboy hat and boots take my friend's souls and shit them down the visitor's toilet.
In the movies, I always played heroic types. But when the stage lights went out, it was time for drugs and stupidity and the coveting of women. Now it's time. Time to be a little of what I'd always fantasized being. A hero.
Mr. Kennedy, ask not what your rest home can do for you. Ask what you can do for your rest home.
Hey, you're copying my best lines.
And let me paraphrase one of my own. Let's take care of business.
Just what are you getting at, Elvis?
I think you know what I'm getting at, Mr. President. We're going to kill us a mummy.
So I love that scene. I love that where he's just, you know, you have that. If this was a Rocky movie, we'd have a montage, you know, in here. but he just finally has enough. And I have to say, the one thing that that I really thought worked well in this film is that obviously Bruce Campbell was wearing some padding as Elvis. But they got that jumpsuit just tight enough. And he looks like he's incredibly uncomfortable, but it being Elvis, he's going to try to fit into it anyhow, you know?
Right, right.
And every time you see him in it, it works perfectly for, and it's not, I mean, you get a chuckle out of it, but you just have, the character just has so much heart, you know, it's hard to just like, you know, laugh directly at him.
At the end of the movie, like you're saying, you know, they assemble all the things that they feel they need for their mission to kill the mummy, and that includes getting dressed up with Elvis, as you say, getting into his jumpsuit, and JFK, Jack Kennedy, wearing this really nice suit, and he's got his motorized wheelchair like all worked out so he can have some wheels for the mission. And then they have that scene. I hope you don't mind me talking.
No, go ahead.
Where they have all their stuff together, and then they go down the hallway. And any other movie would be featuring the heroes, right, strolling down a hallway, you know, and ready to take on whatever, you know. But these two guys, one in a walker, one in a little motorized wheelchair, but it has all the same gravity that you would get from an action movie otherwise. Yeah.
And that would be like your montage when they're getting stuff together, but rather than doing any kind of, it's like, it's a very simple thing. They have one mummy to take out. They're going to do it with fire because fire cleanses. It's like they set out their suits. They set out, you know, the matches, the scissors, all the things they need to do to get out there and take care of business. And then once they do get out there, they have the very poignant conversation about, you know, their lives and how they were as fathers, which I thought was really kind of... put a lot of weight on the fact that even though these characters are at the end of their life, they could actually lose their life now trying to do this, you know?
The movie does a good job of setting up the stakes.
And that's kind of really does.
Yeah, and it's revisited, you know, near the end of the movie when Elvis is thinking that everyone who was asleep back at the rest home, they have their souls and they're not going to lose their souls. And so it all takes place in the scope of this little place, but it's big stakes. I mean, very, very strong stakes are going on.
Yeah, and that's his direction, right? His direction is that, you know, what his drive is that he's going to keep these people from losing their souls because he can't think of anything worse, because he's thinking of himself, than not having a soul when you die and just having it all gone. And so, like, that's how that this, you know, how it ends there. You know, he's just like, man, you know, I this is what I set out to do. This is what I did, you know. But the fight scene between him and the mummy and JFK was that it worked perfectly. I mean, considering that, you know, they were older people, you know, I thought we were going to have some kind of scene where he did some crazy stuff that, you know, like suddenly he was able to do this and that. And he goes into his kung fu stance and, you know, and he kicks his leg and his hip goes out. The one question that I have, though, is that, they spent all the time setting this up. They're going to trap the mummy. They're going to he found a garden sprayer. He's going to spray him down and light him on fire. They see the mummy, and then he's suddenly then pumping the garden sprayer. And the whole time, the only thing I could think at that point in time was, shouldn't you have done this before you started out?
Yeah.
You know, that part was kind of funny, but I thought that the ending was. Worked out well, and you know it's funny because as the credits roll and they have that little bit where they're saying, you know, Elvis returns in what was the name of the movie, man? I have my notes up here, and it is a it's with the She Vampires or something, and it was supposed to be a prequel to this, and it has been in kind of development hell for pretty much like forever, you know. Right. It has been what is it? I'm trying to find out what the name of the film is, but I guess that a while back Bruce Campbell said that that he was no longer attached to the film. It's supposed to be called Bubba Nosferatu: Curse of the She Vampires.
Right.
But that was a joke. And then suddenly it kind of got some steam with this movie. So they were going to develop it. And I've been hearing about this movie off and on for years. And I think now we can probably say that it's officially dead. I mean, I guess they could bring it back at some point in time, but it sure would have been nice if they could have followed that movie up, you know, in the next year with this prequel, and he could have been a little bit younger. And I don't know. I don't know how it would have worked. I think it would have been real cheesy because in this one, Elvis, although he doesn't have a hard time grasping the fact that there's a mummy sucking souls, he's so hard to convince, you know, of the information in front of him. If he'd already done something, then, you know, why would it be so hard to convince him? You know what I mean?
No, I agree. Yeah.
So maybe it wouldn't have worked. But you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, like when they filmed this in 30 days, which is huge for a huge time frame for a low budget movie. There's no Elvis music used because they couldn't afford it.
Right.
There's no the little thing with all the Elvis movies he's watching on TV. None of those are actually from Elvis movies. They recreated that because they couldn't afford it.
Sure.
You know, but when you think of that, I mean, it all works, right? I mean, everything comes together.
Right. There doesn't feel like there's any Elvis missing from the movie. You know, like you didn't. Yeah. I bought everything about that. So and I thought this. Yeah, the movie. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think he sold the Elvis character very well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that that's something that he had to be able to do. And I think you run the risk of saying, hey, that's Bruce Campbell, you know, doing an Elvis impersonation. But I think that 30 seconds in, I'm like, that's Elvis, you know. And I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you saying?
No, I was just going to agree with you that the music that they used was specifically good for that movie. It had that kind of like, you know, good, the bad, and the ugly type of feel to it, you know. You know, without being an actual Morricone score. I just thought it worked so well for the movie. The tone for the movie was so well set by that, and how the rest home looked and was dingy and was dark, and everything about the movie I thought was really kind of like well orchestrated for what they wanted.
And there is a I can't remember the name of the rest home, but they thank it. They thank the rest home at the end, and the rest home is not real.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I thought that was kind of funny that they say that, and also like when the end credits, he does it again. This is touching again on Phantasm. It says Criminal Prosecution and the Wrath of Bubba Hotep is a variant of the Wrath of the Tall Man from the Phantasm films. They say that at the end.
Uh-huh. And I
just think that that's kind of interesting. I wish that there was a little bit more. I wish that they explained that, you know, what if he, you know, what creative why he felt that he needed to cross those two. That just seems like a weird thing.
Yeah.
You know, a weird cross of you know, what they are, because clearly this movie is a lot more. Like I said, this movie has a lot more drama in it. It's very much a dramatic piece about getting old and feeling useless and just going through the day-to-day grind of just being alive with no drive whatsoever. You know, and they hammer that. I mean, it doesn't feel as though they hammer it home, but it feels as though by the end of the midway through the film, it's like, oh my God, this guy's life sucks. You know.
And the plot of the movie works really well for being in a rest home and these old men who nobody would believe, because if you take a step back, it's a very similar movie that we might have seen with like kids at a boarding school where the adults would never believe them. So you've got these kind of like marginalized people with little power who they can't go to the adults, but they have to take care of, you know, the supernatural threat on their own. So it's an interesting similar dynamic if this was like a young adult type of story, but instead it's a really old adult type of story.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, they did the whole way that they showed the, and not only that, but not only were they marginalized, but they weren't like trying to say, hey, this is going on. They were just saying, hey, we're going to have to take care of this, but only after they realized that even though they have so little, they care about the little that they have. And in this case, the little that they have is their souls and their friends' souls, you know, and they place a high value on that, which, you know, if it was a young man's movie, would they care about that? They'd be more worried about their life than their souls. These guys are like, we don't care if we're going to die in the process, but our souls are ours. We want them to, whatever happens to them, you know, when you die, that's what we want to happen. We don't want some dude just eating them up for lunch, you know?
Yeah.
So I use a Netflix rating score for this. It's a 5-star score. If you're not, I mean, usually everybody's familiar with Netflix. Those of you that aren't, 1 star pretty much means you hated it. 2 stars, like, yeah, I watched it. I you know, I punched myself in the face once, but you know, I'm not, you know, it's not too bad. 3 is like, you know, I was entertained. You know, it was decent. 4 is like, man, I liked it. I would probably watch it again. 5 is like, man, this was a really good movie and it meant a lot to me for whatever reason. So, with that being in mind, how would you rate Bubba Hotep?
I'd give it like a 4 to a 5. I mean, for me, I'll hold off 5s for like movies that I really, 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 you know, click with. So I would give this more of a 4 in that I enjoyed this movie a lot and I would be happy to watch it again. And I would make people watch it with me if the mood struck me. So, but that being said, is it like a good movie? I mean, is it like a really, really good movie? Well, no, it's not. I mean, that's not the point. You know, it's the movie that spoke to me, and I would recommend it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I do my movie rating. It has to be a movie that spoke to me. I'm sure that somewhere out there, there's probably award-winning film like 2001 that I think is a one. Anyway, so like, you know, this movie, you know, I would say that the first time I watched it, I gave it a four. I have to say that the second time I watched it, maybe it's just the point I am in my life with my age and you know, my family and, you know, things like that. But I'm going to say that I think that right now today, I'm going to say this is a five. I'm really happy with it. It meant a lot more this time around watching it than it did the first time around. Really, like all those points really hit home, and there was a lot of, I think the marginalization of the two individuals didn't really hit home until I watched it this time, and I'm like, wow, I'm like, this movie does not get enough good press, and I feel as though it's my duty to give it a five, to elevate it a little bit higher, so everybody gives it a chance and goes back and watches it and says, hey, you know, because the movie, even though it's about the mummy, right? I mean, that's, you know, it's about them taking on a mummy. It's sure. Not really about that. That's the plot line. It's definitely about the inner turmoil they're feeling at the end of their life. That's the way I'm looking at it, you know?
Right. Right. Because, you know, we can abstract the mummy out as the inevitable creeping death that they all have to face. If we want to get, you know, like big fuzzy headed about it, you know, I mean, it's important that these guys lived and they strove and they accomplished at the end of their life. And in fact, if we want to talk symbolic for a minute, you know, both, you know, the guy who may or may not be Elvis. I mean, we assume that he's actually Elvis who did a Prince and the Pauper type thing, and then he lost identity. But maybe he's crazy, just like, you know, we're pretty sure that Jack Kennedy is not actually John F. Kennedy. But it doesn't matter. I mean, what we have is a guy who is the king, and we have a guy who was president during the Camelot era of politics. So he's like another king. And it takes a king to defeat a king. And so you've got this like undead pharaoh that requires exceptional people to defeat. And so if, you know, so I liked how the movie worked on this big type of mythic symbolic way. Now, did the guy who wrote it, did he think that? I don't know. Probably not. But I like getting those kind of crazy ideas out of a movie. And so I can appreciate that as two, you know, two heroic types taking on something that only they can take on.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I think that, you know, considering the budget they had for this film, I feel as though they did a good job. The money was well spent. I feel as though, I mean, although The Mummy could have been done a little bit better, but you got to consider the age of the film. But I think the performances were all top-notch, you know.
Oh, yeah, from everyone. I agree.
Yeah, I think it was really well done. So that is Bubba Hotep. And, you know, I'm going to, what I want to do is, whenever I have a guest host, I want you to give me three items. Now, they can be any kind of, they can be anything. It can be anything you want. It can be music. It can be a new pair of tennis shoes. It can be whatever floats your boat. But give me three items that are just kind of like wowing you in the last month or so. Something that, you know, you might want to share.
Okay. And I can give you some recommendations. I will always tell people that they should read the Planetary comic book. So even though it's older than a month, I'm going to push Planetary all the time. Secondly, you should now, Aaron, you know that I like Game of Thrones, so I love that TV show, and I write about it all the time.
For those of you that don't know, Pat is the guy who always posts on the Facebook page with the Game of Thrones reviews. That if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, if you haven't watched that episode, you don't want to read them. But if you do, it has an awful lot of insight, you know, and always gives me a chuckle. So that's the Pat I'm talking to now, you know.
All right. Anyway, so last year there's an artist up in Brooklyn, and she did a solo. And I'm sorry, she did a concept album about Game of Thrones. It's seven songs about seven characters. And so I recommend that greatly. So if you go to Twitter and you follow at Haley Bowery, it's HaleyBowery, from her Twitter account, you can find a link to her band, The Manimals, and you can listen to her album Seven. And so that,
I mean, they're named the Manimals after the great hit NBC show. How can you not love that?
Look, we're not going to argue about how they named themselves, but yes, there is a great TV show called Manimal, but I don't think it has anything to do with the band. So that's my second recommendation. And damn it, if I'd known that you were going to be asking me these things, I would have come up with something better.
I couldn't decide whether or not I should warn you or not, and I'm like, I like the element of surprise a little bit better.
All right. And so I'm now going to recommend a book by a guy named Patrick Rothfuss. Everyone should read The Name of the Wind. Yeah, The Name of the Wind. It's the first part of a trilogy. He's written the first two books. The third book is not yet out, and he's one of these guys that takes forever to write his books. So I'm warning you ahead of time that
fantasy?
You might. It's fantasy, and it's really good. It's okay. Really good.
All right. So Haley Bowery is HaleyBowery, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got that one, The Name of the Wind and Planetary. Okay. I got, I just want to make sure I'm taking notes as we're doing this so I can put together show notes. So I want to make sure everybody can link, find this stuff, you know?
Okay. We're good.
All right. So, you know, the thing is with it's funny, when I was younger, I read pretty much strictly fantasy. Like very rarely did I venture into science fiction, like into like a, unless it was like, I always loved the anthologies, like the year's best science fiction books.
Sure.
That's the science fiction I read. And of course, comics. And if there's science fiction on TV, man, I was like eating that stuff up, you know? And then it's funny, as I got older, I appreciate the science fiction more than I appreciate the fantasy, I think. And I'm not exactly sure why that is. I'm not exactly sure why it flipped for me, but for some reason it has. And I don't know why. And I keep trying to find that fantasy book that's going to bring me back. And I'm talking fantasy like old school sword and sorcery kind of fantasy, not fantasy like, you know, a werewolf or a monster.
Sure.
You know, and I'm constantly looking for a new book, a new story. And although I appreciate the Game of Thrones novels, man, there's a lot of words.
I get where you're coming from. I understand.
There's certain things that can be more concise. I don't need 20 pages about somebody's shoes, man. I'm like, I just need the story to move at a little bit quicker pace. You know, as much as I enjoy the books, it's like there's sometimes I'm like, okay, man, there's a lot of words here, and you're saying like four things. And again, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying not necessarily for me, you know.
I got you.
So that is, I'm trying to think. So I better give three, or else I'm going to say, well, you didn't give three. So yeah. I'm going to give three. First of all, you know, big music fan, and always coming across new stuff, and nothing that you know, you come across something and you're like, man, I like this song, but the rest of the album is like meh, you know. And so I never really recommend that. But I tell you what, Metallica's new album. Man, I have been rocking that thing, and
awesome.
I love it. So I'm going to recommend that. Comics. Oh my God. There's so many comics. First of all, anything from DC right now is knocking my socks off. Right now at this point today, and I don't know about tomorrow or next week, but today, I'm probably 2 weeks behind on their stuff, but right now they can do no wrong. They have not written a comic I have not liked. I mean, they've just all been, even if it's something that's a little off, it's still great reading. But mm-hmm. I always like to recommend independent comics. And there's a comic called Animosity, and I believe it's hit issue 4. I haven't read the fourth issue yet, from Aftershock Comics, who's putting out a lot of really good stuff. And I actually bought a couple of the trades digitally, but I haven't read them yet. But Animosity is the idea that just one day animals become self-aware. And it is, it's really freaky. The first issue is that when that happens, and it's really freaky, like the different things that they do with animals. It's not just like, man, we're self-aware, we're going to kill all the humans. It's not like that at all. You know, you have these moments where, like somebody's getting ready to butcher a cow, and the cow's like, you really don't have to do this. You have a guy that has a lizard in the tank. And he's sitting there, and the lizard says, so-and-so is cheating on you. You have a dog who becomes self-aware and is trying to protect the little girl. And those are going to be our main characters we're following. You have monkeys who realize that, or I think it's pandas that realize that they can, you know, that they somehow get guns and, you know, they attack the humans. So you have all these different elements of the animals, you know, learning and coming together. And I just really been digging this book. It's I find it a little bit different, and I'm really liking it. So give that a shot. Also, anything from Aftershock Comics. I've only read like 5 of their titles, but I haven't found one I haven't liked yet. So that's good. The only downside to that is that they are $4.99 digitally, and I think $3.99 or $4.99 digitally, and so $3.99. So I've been kind of hoping for a sale and then swoop in and kind of buy them all. I say that, and then I buy them, and then I forget I own them, and then I never get around to reading them, you know.
Right.
I have to have one more. So many different things going on right now. I've been reading so many comics that I haven't really touched on much else. I mean, I'm gonna say my favorite thing is podcasting. That's what I'm gonna say. I know it's a cop out, but hey, I got the basement all cleaned out. I got my setup here. I'm hoping this recording turns out. If it doesn't, I'm probably gonna beat my head off the counter for half an hour. But everything is. Right now this seems to be working. Everything seems to be recording. And if that's the case, and I get done with this, I'm gonna be a very, very happy man. You know, those of you that need to have feedback or you want to tell me something, and or you want to talk to Pat, you can do that in the Facebook group. Although I will tell everybody now, I'm not going to get into this, but I haven't been hitting Facebook up a lot lately. I can't take any more of the political stuff. I just can't. So I've been kind of avoiding it. And I don't want to go and unfollow everybody, because then hopefully when this phase passes, I got to go back through and figure out who I unfollowed so I can refollow them. And I don't want to do that. The Google group is a really good place if you want to just join in the conversation. The conversation, which was, I need like 20 movies to review, and now I have well over 100. I haven't even added like the last like 10 messages worth of films to the list. So everybody there has their idea of what they want to see, and I want to watch them all. If I haven't already seen them, I want to go back and rewatch them again. Also, scifidig@gmail.com is where you can reach me. Patrick, you got any final words?
No, I just really appreciate that you asked me to watch a movie and talk to you about it.
I'm glad we can work it out, you know?
Yeah.
As we get older, the time, I don't know where it goes. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Flies by.
Yeah, you'd think you could just, like, say, hey, let's get together and do this. Remember when we were in high school and we were like, man, I can't wait to get out of high school. I can do whatever I want whenever I want. But yeah. That's not true at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Those of you that don't know, I am looking for people who are willing to guest host. And the way I'm going to do this is that you're going to pick a movie from the list. You pick. I'll let you pick. There's going to be a few people where I'm going to pick, because there's a couple wise guys out there. And I'm going to pick, and I'm going to pick really bad movies and make them sit through them. But the guest host picks, and then we would try to set up a time. Right now, this semester, Monday nights are working for me, because the problem before is the only time I could record was during the day, because my days off are Monday and Tuesday, and I'm home during the day. Well, nobody else is. So Monday nights have actually, this can work every week, and the idea is that if you think you can do it, we don't have to set a definitive date, because I know how that happens. I know how people set up dates and then something happens and they can't do it, you know. So my game plan is either to have an alternative topic, or if worse comes to worse and we're not sure when we're going to be able to record, I can solo the movie, which isn't anywhere near as fun, because I enjoy the banter back and forth, although I hardly let Patrick talk. But keep in mind, I haven't been behind a mic for a very long time. I have a lot to get out, you know. So Patrick, you're invited anytime. I mean, I'm serious. If you come up with an idea or a movie you're interested in watching, you shoot me an email or a text message or however you want to do it. And I am more than happy to sit down with you again. And I hope that, I hate to say this, but I hope my kids have busy semesters next semester so I can have Monday. Cause not only is it the time frame, it's the bandwidth, because everybody has to play games or do whatever. Right. And it's like, I'm trying to do something and I'm cursing because, I recently was able to upgrade my DSL speed to something that's not pathetic, but nowhere near as good as like a cable modem would be, you know, but still good enough for me, you know? So, all right, everybody, that's it. scifidig@gmail.com is where you can reach me. And that's all I have this week. Patrick, thank you very much. Any final words?
No final words. Okay. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Over and out. Place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be just so lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. I'll be just so lonely, baby. I'll be just so lonely. I'll be so lonely, they could die. Tears keep flowing, the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on Lonely Street, they'll never look back and think you're so, they think you're so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely, well, they're so lonely, and they could die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. Well, just take a walk down Lonely Street to heartbreak.